Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, your host, president of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And this podcast, as you know, is dedicated to really helping you progress in your career, accelerate some of the projects that you're working on, build your own career progress and do so with less stress. So that's our mandate here. And of course, you can always reach out to us on our website at uniquedevelopment.com. This episode or these series of episodes are sponsored by or brought to you by our Site Leader Development Program. The Site Leader Development Program is a new program we have that's designed to help plant managers and production managers who are future plant managers grow in their capabilities to empower their teams, hold them to be more accountable, free up their time as senior leaders so that they're not constantly firefighting and solving problems. And so if that's of interest to you, of course, you can reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com. Today's guest is a client of ours, Dean Crawford, is with us from Aspire MRO. And so I want to do him justice. I'm going to read a bit of his introduction. Dean Crawford is the Vice President of Human Resources for Aspire MRO. And like a lot of the companies we feature, people might not ever have heard of Aspire MRO, but what they do is really cool. They take a passenger aircraft and they retrofit them into cargo aircraft, and they're located in Texas. And so we've done a little bit of work with Dean and his team on leadership development. Dean brings more than 30 years of human resources experience from multiple Fortune 500 companies, including Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, as well as international aerospace companies like Rolls-Royce and Safran. And he was actually a client of ours before, which is why he looked to bring us in here at his current company, Aspire. His career spans aviation, aerospace, and manufacturing, encompassing both represented and non-represented environments. That's the code word for union and non-union environments. Dean has worked with a spectrum of leaders from exceptional to challenging and has navigated businesses through periods of significant growth, major downsizing, and even crisis management. Oh my gosh, I'm looking forward to this discussion even more. This background gives him an invaluable perspective on people, performance, and organizational resilience. So I'm excited to dig into that more. Welcome to the podcast, Dean.
Thanks, Greg.
And by the way, if people need to have a passenger plane retrofitted into a cargo plane, they can do that by visiting aspiremro.com is the company website. Dean Crawford can be found on LinkedIn. So, Dean, an amazing and eclectic background. So we do send out some starter questions, obviously, but I'm just curious, do you mind walking us through a little bit of the highlights of your journey to being a VP of HR at Aspire? What have been some of the other stepping stones in these other industries that you've been in? Can you do that?
I've been blessed to have a great career. As you mentioned in the introduction, most of it in aerospace or manufacturing. Actually, I went to school, got a degree in human resources and labor relations, and started out working at a large aerospace company that probably had 5,000 hourly shop floor employees.
Wow.
And so, I spent my first couple of years on the shop floor working with supervisors, resolving problems, and then moved to various locations, both within that business and then moved on to other companies, as you mentioned. But had a great opportunity to get some neat experience, as you said, both in union environments, non-union environments. I think I've done some neat things with unions and also had some difficulties in some of those situations. I've also spent some time in the government contracting world. So that was very exciting, where we had people all over the globe and the Obama administration and some of the things that were going on in Afghanistan.
Oh, right. Because you were in the defense business.
Yeah, we were in the defense government contracting business, and also a stint in the automotive industry where we first worked with your company.
Let me ask you, Dean, knowing that you're, in the intro, it talks about like you've been in the high growth mode, adding and growing. You've been in the opposite of that, which is downsizing and restructuring. What, knowing that those are two really big extremes, but they're also both equally disruptive in their own unique ways. But I'm wondering, is there anything in common with businesses that are either accelerating a lot and you're having to add a lot versus restructuring a lot? Are they similar, different? What's your take on that?
Well, I think having the right leaders in place going through, I mentioned my intro, the crisis management piece, having the right leaders as you go through some of that. COVID was a great example where I was actually at a company called Safran, and we were online to have a great year building aircraft seats, and COVID hit, and the business fell off a cliff,
Like people canceling
we
orders and
absolutely overnight, yes, and so we had to shift very quickly, and the communication and the leaders and some of the decisions we made, I think, were absolutely critical in terms of really keeping that business afloat, because it got very difficult very quickly.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. Speaking of both successes and setbacks, I'm always thinking we learn from both, really. We learn from successes, we learn from setbacks. And I always think that, I don't know if you discovered it, but at some points in your career, you're kind of going on enthusiasm and bravado, and then you kind of lock in and you see an experience that tells you, hey, I might be onto something here. I'm just curious for you, like, what's an earlier win you can remember in your career that helped you figure out that I'm on the right path. This is something I could be successful at.
Yeah, again, we talked about my early time in labor relations, working with unions, and had some successes there. Actually, had worked at a place that assembled the Hummer military vehicle,
Okay.
and that group in Indiana, the organized group, had gone out on strike every contract expiration for seven different contracts.
Oh,
So that
wow.
basically, that workforce, that was all they knew. And so I worked for a great leader and a great mentor, which I think was very important to the success. But we got a contract without a strike for the first time, and that actually was the beginning of the commercial Hummer variant with that labor agreement. We had a framework of language in there to build a different facility as a result of work that we did with the United Auto Workers.
Wow.
So that was a really neat thing, and people felt really good. The workforce felt good about it, and it was kind of a new beginning for a company that had been through a lot of challenges.
Yeah, congratulations. And one of the things that I'm mindful of, oh, I'm getting a tea brought in. Thank you. I appreciate that. My voice is a little hoarse today. I didn't realize that you and I actually had similar sort of intro into manufacturing. I was one of my early stints. I went to General Motors Institute, which was owned by
Yeah, I
GM.
actually we did a stint at GMI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I went to GMI, which is now called Kettering University in Flint, and then I worked at GM's plant in St. Catharines. And one of my little co-op assignments, I guess, for a few months was working in labor relations during the national contract negotiations. And my dad had a background in labor relations, so it's no small feat that win that you got in terms of, changing the tone of it. Do you have a? I'm just curious. Do you have a sense of why or some of the ingredients that made it a little bit more likely that you did that? Because obviously you must have changed what had traditionally been a bit adversarial to be more of a collaboration, give and take. Is there anything you can put your finger on as to why that relationship sort of got stronger versus,
You know, we did
what
a lot
was
of
before?
pre-work on that. We actually had the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service come in and do some training with us. We put a theme around the whole bargaining process of, win-win, and how do we come up with solutions that both parties could work through. We had some very difficult contract negotiation sessions, but listened. We did some neat things with the union. We went to lunch on Fridays, and one of the guys was very active in his church, and we had their church group fix us lunch. And so it was building, I think, and I think this is important for supervisors too, building the trust, of each other, and working through that. So, but that was a great experience fairly early in my career. But yeah, that kind of I really got excited about the labor relations field at that point.
Right. So, somewhat shifting gears a little bit to lean and continuous improvement. I mean, you've been in the automotive business, you've been in the defense business, you've been in the aerospace business. So you've definitely embraced lean and continuous improvement. I'm just wondering what your view of why a lot of those initiatives either don't get their full traction, they often settle for low-hanging fruit, or it's very lumpy, and maybe what you've noticed in the ones that become better in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think they have to be driven by the leadership, top leadership. I think they have to be, the wins have to be reinforced. I think how they're communicated, is critical. The wins, one particular company, if you don't mind me mentioning the company, is Lockheed Martin. I think they did a great job with lean. That at the time I was there, they called it LM21, and it was they had a whole organization around process improvement methodology, and we were fortunate to have a local individual that I think was very focused on that. He did a great job. He actually went on to do other things within the company relative to lean, but I think setting the framework in place, training people, showing them the value of it, both in leadership and also the employees.
Right.
But again, I think it goes back to the reinforcement and communication of the wins that you get and why, explaining, why it's critical that you do that.
Yeah. And I know that was one of the things you liked in our program, is that whole concept of explaining why and how important it is to get people to buy in. So it sounds like you're saying, hey, when the leadership drives it, but then they stay with it long enough, they don't sort of abandon it as a flavor of the month, and they're very persistent, and they keep it being pushed into and cultivated at the front line. That's what the key to success is.
Absolutely.
One of the things that clients will challenge us with sometimes, Dean, and is just this link between leadership effectiveness and operational performance. Sometimes I think people see it as the soft skills over here and the operational excellence over here. And other people, I think, especially now, are looking at how are these two things integrated. With what you've observed in your career path, where have you seen either leadership being the difference maker to the positive or the negative from it in terms of operational performance? What is this linkage?
Yeah, there was a Harvard Business Study back in the 90s that actually became, I think, very popular at one point, still talked about, which is the service profit chain, and basically says, hey, if you're treating employees well, employees are performing well, they're loyal, doing well, customer satisfaction, profits, that whole chain continues to work. And having the right leaders to, I talked about the lean, reinforcing the behaviors and driving, making the right decisions. To me, that's so critical. As in the government contracting business, had a CEO that did a great job. He came in and established a mission, vision, and values, and did a great job of every month. He would stand in front of the leadership team and reinforce the criticality of that. And we embedded that in everything, performance appraisal process, new employee orientation. We talked about it all the time, but that leader made that happen. I actually ran into him about 4 weeks ago, and I actually told him that. I hadn't seen him in probably 4 or 5 years. And I said, I still use some of your material because I thought it was really good.
Yeah, that's funny. And this is what we try to tell leaders. And it's tough if you're maybe newer in your leadership journey. But what you said is that you want to be the type of leader who's remembered in a positive way, even years afterwards, where people have a lasting positive impact. I think one of my colleagues, we just finished doing the first cohort of a site leader development program for plant managers. And he said, we probably underestimate how much people do pay attention to what leaders do and say. And we have to be more conscious of that. This just raised a question, which wasn't sort of on the list that I gave you ahead of time, but I'm just curious, like, having been in some, like you said, 5,000 person organizations at times, we often say that a plant isn't really just one culture, although there is often a plant culture, but there's also different cultures on different shifts and different departments. Have you observed that as well? And is that really all about the leader, or is it like some of it's the history of that department? What's your take on like different subcultures almost that can be in a plant?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. But I think the leadership piece is important. And I think you have that, in different places. But I think, you could have some legacy issues and challenges, but I think the leaders can, a good leader, if he came into that situation, might look at it and say, hey, we need to go change this, fix this. But certainly, subcultures and, we're current organization where I am today, we're going through a significant growth spurt, hiring new people. And so, the culture, we talk about it every new employee orientation. We had a new employee orientation session yesterday, and we talked about the criticality, importance of us trying to build a culture, do the right thing, have the right leaders. We're spending time on that now, which is again why we had your team come in earlier. So, yeah, I think very important.
Okay. All right. Very good. So, sometimes we've noticed, and admittedly, and actually, that's good that you raised that in this mode you're in, you've been hiring a lot of people. And that's always interesting because people come in with their own culture experiences and backgrounds from whatever company they were with before, right? And some of those are positive, some of those are less positive. So it is about establishing that new sort of expectation and relationship. When you look at organizations, and maybe yours is, even though it's growing, it's not as big as some of the other ones you've been in. I just wonder about this idea of misalignments that can occur between different departments. We're all supposed to be driving to the same overall KPIs and results, but different departments almost seem to have their own little empires sometimes, or there's almost a misalignment of incentives, and one team is, the classic case is purchasing is trying to get cheaper sources and cheaper unit costs, and meanwhile, production and operations are, saying we can't use this
Sure.
stuff, it doesn't work for us. I'm just curious what you've noticed in again, in terms of realigning these misalignments, whether you've ever noticed that different departments seem to be pulling in different directions.
Yeah, no, and I've seen that a couple of different ways, different places. I think the leader over the group has to effectively lead those kinds of challenges. To me, that's a leadership challenge. But also, I've been in an organization where, we said, hey, if we've got conflicts like that and they get difficult, maybe we need to call a timeout, step back, and kind of take a breath, and let's see what we need to do differently so that we're on the same team. And within that organization, we, from a compensation standpoint, we had different alignments of what the compensation incentives were, and actually made some changes, to try to adapt that better to how do we adjust the organization so that the compensation structure is as effective as it could be.
Yeah, I always think if I didn't do like my business degree, I probably would have done economics or something. And just this idea of incentives, which almost sounds a little bit, incentives don't necessarily just mean financial incentives, but there's lots of reasons why people do what they do. But usually there's some sort of perceived gain and or avoidance of a loss. And so I think every organization has to take a look at that you think you're setting the right KPIs, but sometimes those KPIs, when they're taken too far, can actually create conflicts with
Absolutely,
others to the
conflict,
overall.
internal conflicts.
The one I saw, which you could probably relate to from your days in the auto industry, although the company you were with, which was one of our clients, I don't think had as big a problem in this. But I remember doing this work for a company that was in the glass business, automotive glass, and I visited one of their plants in Ohio. And the guy said, yeah, we proposed like we could take some cost out of the assembly of putting our glass in this particular vehicle, but we were told by the purchasing agent, we're not interested because to do that, you're going to charge me 25 cents more per glass. And the guy said, yeah, but we're going to save you $3 per unit in assembly time. He says, well, I don't get paid on assembly time savings. I get paid based on unit cost going down. So it was just a classic example where the net benefit to that automaker would have been negative by not accepting that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In seeing the opportunities for lean and continuous improvement, is there an example of some maybe even surprising low-hanging fruit that you noticed in one or more of the things that you've been involved in manufacturing, like just something where it was almost shocking just by asking some questions and leading people through some, like how much additional savings there could be or how much of a gain there might be?
I look at it, again, I'm wearing my HR hat,
Yeah.
but from a leadership role standpoint, having the right leader in the right role. So maybe there was an organization had several that was struggling, And we made an adjustment with the leader, put a different person in. Maybe we took some time and went outside the organization, but put the right person in the organization, and were surprised at the difference that it made by having the right person, and maybe the other person was there too long. But I've seen that happen several times.
I love it, by the way, that you keep bringing it back to leadership. We should turn this into a series of 30-second spots on, the importance of leadership. But speaking of leadership, in the area of like succession and developing future leaders and almost nudging people to consider leadership roles and encouraging their development, what is your sense from an HR perspective of there's some key nuggets about sort of managing the talent pipeline or ha having people develop and think about their development in terms of future leadership?
Absolutely. I think there's several things. I think self-awareness and emotional intelligence, understanding that about yourself, the ability to manage conflict. I think that's a core if a leader is going to be successful throughout his or her career, that they understand how to manage conflict. I think being consistent with employees. Fair, so that you build the trust with employees. I think those things are critical. And as I've said to you and your team before, I think the frontline supervisor role in every organization where I've been is absolutely critical. They have challenges from the employees. They have challenges from their leadership, and to me, they can make or break an organization, which is why I think it's so important to have the right people in those roles. But I think the influence, building the trust of the employees, the conflict management, the interpersonal skills, those are all, to me, critical nuggets
Right.
of jumpstarting in your career.
All right. That's good. Now, this is another unplanned question for you, but knowing that a lot of people's career, you may have seen this model before. It's like an S curve. And for anyone watching the YouTube video, they can see me drawing this in the air. So a lot of people's career starts with a little bit of struggle at first as they're kind of figuring out what their role is. And then they get on this path where they're starting to achieve some degree of success, right? And if they stay on that career path too long, they start to peak and sometimes get disenfranchised, a little bit bored. And I always think a leader's job is to kind of see that people are on that path and almost propose that they consider jumping to a new S curve before they almost even think that they're ready. I just wondered whether that is something you agree with, whether that's something that you've seen people struggle with, the idea of helping people on their career S curves.
Yeah, and I think in many cases that asking or suggesting to people they step outside of the comfort zone, maybe trying new things and being successful in different roles. I think in my career, the ability to move with several different companies, several different locations, work with many different leaders, both good and bad, that's helped me kind of be a full spectrum. Leader with the background experience that I've got.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's probably something that you don't even like, at least right now, you're recognizing how valuable that's been. And I'm sure that's why you got recruited into your role. But it's like this idea of the comfort zone. Again, I'm drawing with my hand. So if you guys are wondering, you can always go to the YouTube channel and watch the video. But it's like at the center is your comfort zone, the things that you're just really good at, really comfortable with. The next ring out is your learning zone. And what we really want people to do is, if complacency is setting in, you just need to expand into the learning zone. The challenge is the longer you're in the learning zone, the bigger your comfort zone is. So like Dean's comfort zone is getting really big because he's been in a lot of different environments. And then there is the panic zone, which you just have to be aware of. Sometimes people get pushed a little too far and they start to show signs that they're kind of burning out. But this idea of trying to help people stay at least enough of their role is in the learning zone, I think, is so important. So thanks for bringing that up. Now, the one thing, Dean, that people do talk about in engagement, although I said in a previous interview with another guest, I said, I'm not sure how long this idea of how long we've got to talk about multi-generational workforces in terms of engagement and motivation. I think it tends to come and go. Like it came around when the baby boomers were in the workforce, then it sort of like got a little quiet, and then it came up again with the millennials. I'm seeing now that more young people are into leadership roles, you know, in their 30s, their 20s and 30s. I'm just wondering, what's your take on multiple generations, and is there really a difference? Is it the same things over and over again? What's your take on that?
Yeah. Oh, I think there are some differences with the different groups. You know, remote work is always a topic that comes up with respect to maybe one generation, having the expectation for that versus another generation. So think it's important to consider that from a leadership standpoint, be able to lead and manage with both a multi generational, but also an international
Yeah.
workforce. That is also becoming important.
Yeah, I think you're, I mean, although it was interesting, Kirk Langford, our general manager, and Suzanne Jakes, who's our marketing coordinator, they did a podcast recently on multi-generations, and I like the one point that probably doesn't come up often enough. Just by your age, doesn't always determine how technically savvy you are, right? There's many people I know in their 60s, and even 70s who have a high degree of technological sophistication. My mom's current boyfriend, my dad had passed a couple years ago. My mom's current boyfriend is 93. She's 86. He's 93. He used to own a tech company. He's like the most technically savvy. He could probably show me things to do with my phone that I don't even know. And at the same time, not every young person is also technically savvy. So I think all you're saying is, yeah, of course there's changes in how people are brought up and what technologies are around as they're growing up. But really, it's just being aware of meeting people where they are and kind of working with them from that. We've covered a lot of ground so far, Dean. So I always think, like at this point, I always want to make sure that I didn't forget to ask you something, or if there was a point you really wanted to make that I didn't ask you about. So is there anything else you want to contribute to the audience?
No, I think just a couple of the points I made about the importance of communication and influencing an organization and getting, for the frontline supervisors and that level of leadership, how important it is to have the trust of the employees, and kind of goes back to that service profit chain I talked about, where getting their loyalty employees, if you ask them to do something, and you're taking care of them, they'll do the same thing for you.
Well, that's a great way to leave it, Dean. So thank you again so much for being our guest on the podcast. Again, Dean is the VP of HR at Aspire MRO, and aspiremro.com is the website. They do some really cool things refurbishing passenger aircraft into cargo aircraft. The company's a relatively young startup, but still, multiple years in and on a growth path. And then, of course, Dean Crawford, you can reach him and connect him on LinkedIn as well. So, Dean, thank you again for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. And thank you as an audience member. Again, the thing about podcasts is I think ours does well. We definitely have a loyal base. But the only thing is, how do you help new people discover the podcast? And really, that's done by having you take, I know it's a lot of effort to ask, go into the podcasting platform, write a little quick review, give it a 4 or 5 star, subscribe, send it to somebody. I do that now on my phone with podcasts, is I'll send somebody a podcast, not usually my own. That's a little selfish, but I'll send a podcast episode to somebody. And if there's someone who would benefit from today's message with Dean, please consider doing so. Of course, if you need to reach out to us, we're in the leadership development training business, working with people like you hear on the podcast. If we can be of any benefit to you, it always starts with a conversation, and you can do that through our website at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, I'll just wish you well on your leadership journey, and look forward to seeing you at a future episode.